This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Hello, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. Today's program features soundworks by Erika Jurgens and Eric Meltzner, sent to me on a USB. The second such offering by this duo based in Alpen, Germany. Note to self, describe the contents of the USB. Okay, where are they? Ah yes, here we go. Contents of the USB as follows. Full feed, fast forward, frenzied flights, high art madness and defragmentation, brain grain hotspot, Erika Jurgens. No edition, Eric Meltzner und kleines Ensemble für verschiedene Instrumente, Ars, Recusation, or Recusation, Eric Meltzner und Rolf Pax, Full Feed, Fast Forward, Frenzied Flights, High Art Madness und Defragmentation, NN, und Ähnliche Elemente, Eric Meltzner und Konsorten, No Edition, Jürgen Richter, Meltzner und Schneider Heinzer Scheinform und NN, Full Feed, Fast Forward, Frenzied Flights, High Art Madness and Defragmentation. Eric Meltzner, The Lascivious Ears, Scheinform und Ähnliche Elemente, No Edition, Eric Meltzner und Jürgen Richter, Trio, Sensor, Regular, Full Feed, Fast Forward. So, a USB memory stick thing, packed full of stuff, which I shall get round to in a while. That was the note to self. As we are rapidly approaching Christmas again, I thought I would pepper the programme with some seasonal additions. Pepper, seasonal, seasoning, seasoned, get it? Okay, the whole being underpinned by a substrata, a sort of wallpaper backing ensuring seamlessness and an incongruous juxtaposition, offsetting in parallel by contrapuntally superimposing in contrast with unintended and unforeseen circumstances, happy accidents, fortuitous and sometimes random collisions, possibly to the chagrin of the creators. Who could have foreseen that Eric and Erika would be conjoined in the ether to Leroy Jones's Black Mass? Likewise, when Dylan Thomas was enjoying a happy childhood Christmas in Wales, who could have foreseen his early death in New York at the age of 39, which of course brings us to the Christmas story. So, this is Black Mass, Leroy Jones. This will be trundling along in the background throughout.
One Christmas was so much like the other in those years around the Seatown corner now, out of all sound except the distant speaking of the voices I sometimes hear a moment before sleep, that I can never remember whether it snowed for 6 days and six nights when I was 12, or whether it snowed for 12 days and 12 nights when I was 6. All the Christmases rolled down towards the two-tongued sea like a cold and headlong moon bundling down the sky that was our street.
Dylan Thomas, the great lost Welsh poet of his century, was killed not by his heavy drinking, but by the mistakes and oversights of his physician, according to new evidence in a biography to be published. The book discloses that Thomas was found to be suffering from pneumonia by doctors who examined him when he was admitted in a coma to the New York hospital, where he died in November 1953, shortly after his 39th birthday. The discovery calls into question 50 years of assumptions that the author of Under Milk Wood and enduring poems on the holy innocence of childhood died from an alcoholic insult to the brain, the result of a binge in which, as he allegedly boasted, he drank 18 straight whiskies. I think it's a record.
Sleek and long as jaguars and horrible whiskered, spitting and snarling, they would slide and sidle over the white back garden walls, and the lynx-eyed hunters, Jim and I, fur-capped and moccasined trappers from Hudson Bay off Mumbles Road, would hurl our deadly snowballs at the green of their eyes.
Dr. Milton Feltenstein, a celebrity doctor, diagnosed Thomas as suffering from delirium tremens, a drinker's condition. Dr. Feltenstein injected the poet with 3 doses of morphine, which the biographers say would have had the effect of further depressing his breathing. After the 3rd dose, Thomas's face turned blue and he went into a coma. He was driven to St. Vincent's Hospital, New York, where doctors took 3 hours to restore his breathing using artificial respiration and oxygen. But by then, the poet's brain was irretrievably starved of oxygen. He remained in a deep coma and died 4 days later.
Smoke indeed was pouring out of the dining room, and the gong was bombarding, and Mrs. Prothero was announcing ruin like a town crier in Pompeii. This was better than all the cats in Wales standing on the wall in a row. We bounded into the house laden with snowballs and stopped at the open door of the smoke-filled room. Something was burning, all right. Perhaps it was Mr. Prothero, who always slept there after midday dinner with a newspaper over his face. But he was standing in the middle of the room saying, "A fine Christmas," and smacking at the smoke with a slipper. "Call the fire brigade," cried Mrs. Prothero as she beat the gong. "They won't be here," said Mr. Prothero. "It's Christmas." There was no fire to be seen, only clouds of smoke, and Mr. Prothero standing in the middle of them, waving his slipper as though he were conducting. "Do something," he said. And we threw all our snowballs into the smoke. I think we missed Mr. Prothero, and ran out of the house to the telephone box. "Let's call the police as well," Jim said, "and the ambulance. And Ernie Jenkins, he likes fires." But we only called the fire brigade. And soon the fire engine came, and 3 tall men in helmets brought a hose into the house, and Mr. Prothero got out just in time before they turned it on. Nobody could have had a noisier Christmas Eve. And when the firemen turned off the hose and were standing in the wet, smoky room, Jim's aunt, Miss Prothero, came downstairs and peered in at them. Jim and I waited very quietly to hear what she would say to them. She said the right thing, always. She looked at the 3 tall firemen in their shining helmets, standing among the smoke and cinders and dissolving snowballs, and she said, "Would you like
a new organism?"
Years and years ago,
I've been working on this for some time.
And birds the color of red flannel petticoats whisked past the half
doing.
When we sang and wallowed all night and day,
though we know anyway,
like Sunday afternoon,
you deal in a strange logic, brother young.
We chased.
You spoke once of time and we forgot
the English and the bears.
Now
before the motor, before the wheel, before the Duchess faced
for
when we rode the dark and happy hills there, then.
And into all of that?
Snowed and it snowed.
But
here a small boy said, "It snowed last year, too.
No,
I made a snowman, and my brother knocked it down, and I knocked my brother down, and then we had
to." Yes, it was my
But that was not the same snow, I say. Our snow was not only shaking from whitewashed buckets down the sky. It came shawling out of the ground and swam and drifted out of the arms and hands and bodies of the trees. Snow grew overnight on the roofs of the houses, like a pure and grandfather moss, minutely ivied the walls and settled on the postman opening the gate like a dumb, numb thunderstorm of white, torn Christmas cards. Were there postmen then, too? With sprinkling eyes and wind-cherried noses on spread, frozen feet, they crunched up to the doors and mittened on them manfully. But all that the children could hear was a ringing of bells. You mean that the postman went rat-a-tat-tat and the doors rang? I mean that the bells that the children could hear were inside them. I am
but
there.
But time is an animal thing.
Never bell. There were children.
Animals do not know time.
No, 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 in the back black.
It is a human
no
thing.
White belfries tugged
a
by bishops.
A new
bishop
for our minds.
And they rang their tidings over the bandit town, over
out.
The frozen foam of the powder
the
and ice
plan.
Cream hills,
with
over the crackling sea. It seems
that
all the churches boomed for joy
what
under my window,
we
and the
we
weathercocks
no
crew for
that.
Christmas on our fence. Get back to the postman. They were just ordinary postmen, fond of walking and dogs and Christmas and the snow. They knocked on the doors with blue knuckles. Ours has got a black knocker. And then they stood on the white welcome mat in the little drifted porches and huffed and puffed, making ghosts with their breath, and jogged from foot to foot like small boys wanting to go up. And then the presents.
Knowledge be evil.
And then the presents after the Christmas
knowledge.
Box. And the cold postman with a rose on his button nose tingled down the tea tray slithered run of the chilly, vintage. He went in his ice-boned boots like a man on fishmonger's slabs. He wagged his bag like a frozen camel's hump, dizzily turned the corner on one foot, and by God, he was gone. Get back to the present. There were the useful presents, engulfing mufflers of the old coach days, and mittens made for giant sleds, zebra scarves of a substance like silky gum that could be tug-of-war down to the galoshes, blinding tam-o-shanters like patchwork tea cozies, and bunny-suited busbies and balaclavas for victims of head-shrinking tripes. From aunts who always wore wool next to the skin, there were moustached and rusting vests that made you wonder why the aunts had any skin left at all. And once I had a little crocheted nose bag from an aunt now, alas, no longer whinnying with us. And picturesque books in which small boys, though warned with quotations not to, would skate on Farmer Giles's pond and dig and drown. And books that told me everything about the wasp.
Eternal mind, take
go on to the useless presents. Bags of moist and many-colored jelly babies, and a folded flag and a false nose and a tram conductor's cap and a machine that punched tickets and ran a day, never a capital. Once, by a mistake that no one could explain, a little hat. And a celluloid duck that made, when you pressed it, a most unduck-like sound. A mewing moo that an ambitious cat might make who wished to
be
a cow.
Be
and a painting book in which I could make the grass,
for
the trees, the sea, and the animals any color
end.
I please. And still the dazzling sky-blue sheep are grazing in the red field under the rainbow with bills and peas.
Thank you. der Clown seine Witze? Für wie? Für wie?
Not only death, which shakes and rends all that is human in us, creating a monstrous separation and threatening the soul with isolation that destroys. Not only death, but that accompaniment of mortality which is a perpetual series of lesser deaths and is called change, is challenged, chained, and put in its place by unaltered and successive acts of seasonable regard for loss and dereliction and mutability. The threats of despair, remorse, necessary expiation, weariness almost beyond bearing, dull repetition of things apparently fruitless, unnecessary and without meaning, estrangement, the misunderstanding of mind by mind, forgetfulness, which is a false alarm, grief and repentance, which are true ones, but of a sad company. Young men perished in battle before their parents had lost vigor of age, the perils of sickness in the body and even in the mind, anxiety, honor harassed, all the bitterness of living, become part of a large business which may lead to beatitude. for they are all connected in the memory with holy day after holy day, year by year, binding the generations together, carrying on even in this world, as it were, the life of the dead, and giving corporate substance, permanence, and stability, without the symbol of which, at least, the vast increasing burden of life might at last conquer us and be no longer born.
We know what is evil and what is perfection. We know we are black and beautiful. Speed through the universe at thousands of miles an hour. We know beyond knowing, knowing there is nothing to know. And knowledge is just repetition of bringing forth again of things that were so erased. Everything already exists. You cannot really create.
I am creating. I have created. I made time.
You made animals. Vomit time. And we must destroy them, you know that.
Creative! I brought something into space that was never there! I will drown the universe with my creations!
At some desperate point along the way to the elusive 100th mission, each one of us stops and asks the profound question, what am I doing here? Here I am with the finest education in the world. $500,000 worth of aviation skill, and a citizen in the world's most progressive society. I must be out of my mind to stake all that against the uncertainty of one more mission. Well, it's the same question asked by other fighter jocks in other wars, and it's the same answer, too. I'll tell you the reasons. Mom's apple pie, home, the stars and stripes, baseball, the girl back home, the Easter Bunny, and Santa Claus. Yes, sir, we believe in America, and we love the old red, white, and blue, and we'll die before we disgrace either. But let's face it, fighter pilots are just human, and patriotism gets a little watered down now and then, especially if it's Mother's Day or your wedding anniversary, or if it happens to be your little boy's first day at school and you're 12,000 miles away. And I guess about the toughest thing in any combat tour is not being home for Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mom. Merry Christmas, Dad. Merry Christmas to my love.
And the whistle to make the dog
Merry
cry.
Christmas to the sweetest little girl
beat on the wall with his stick to shake our picture off the wall. And a packet of cigarettes. You put one in your mouth and you stood at the corner of the street and you waited for hours in vain for an old lady to scold you for smoking a cigarette and then with a smirk and then it was breakfast under the moon. Were there uncles like in our house? There are always uncles at Christmas, the same uncles. And on Christmas mornings, with dog-disturbing whistle and sugar fags, I would scour the swathes to town for the news of the little world, and signed always a dead bird by the post office or the white deserted
swing.
The robin, all the one to
sea.
Men and women wading, scooping back from chapel with cat-blue noses and winged butts, all albinos, huddled their stiff black jarring feathers against the irreligious snow. Mistletoe hung from the gas bracket in all the front parlors. There was cherry and walnuts and bottled beer and crackers by the dessert spoon.
Why did you punish yourself
in
that
fur about what the fire?
You are black and full of humanity. Yet you move into the emptiness of godlessness and you are God!
When suddenly he, with a violet wink, put his whistle to his lips
and blew so stridently, so high, so exquisitely loud, that gobbling faces, their cheek bulged with goose, would press against their tinseled windows the whole length of the white echoing street. For dinner we had turkey and blazing pudding, and after dinner the uncles sat in front of the fire, loosened all buttons, put their large, moist hands over their watch chains, groaned a little, and slept. Mothers, aunts, and sisters scuttled to and fro bearing tureens. Aunt Bessie, who had already been frightened twice by a clockwork mouse, whimpered at the sideboard and had some elderberry wine. The dog was sick. Auntie Dursey had to have 3 aspirins, but Auntie Hannah, who liked port, stood in the middle of the snowbound backyard, singing like a big-bosomed thrush. I would blow up balloons to see how big they would blow up to, and then when they burst, which they all did, the uncles jumped and rumbled. In the rich and heavy afternoon, the uncles breathing like dolphins and the snow descending, I would sit among festoons and Chinese lanterns and nibble dates and try to make the model man-of-war, following the instructions of little engineer, and produce what might be mistaken for a seagoing man. Or I would go out, my bright new boots, to sing into the white world on the seaward hill, to fall on dim, damp, to pass through the still street, leaving through footprints from the hidden head. I'd go like this, bad. I'd throw him over the railings and roll him down the hill, and then I'd put him under the door. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm black and bellowing in the snow, clanked and battered through the scudding snow to water as we passed Mr. Daniel. Let's push Mr. Daniel's snowball to a let's write things in the snow. That's right, Mr. Daniel looks like a spaniel all over again. So we walked on the white snow. And the thick wind was snow. The silent one crowded on the snow. Now we were snowblind travelers lost on the north pole. And vast dewlapped dogs with plasts run their necks ambled and shambled up to a stay next to us. We returned home through the short street, where only a few children fumbled with their red fingers looking over the snow and sat on their voices fading away as we trudged up to into the cries of the dark birds and the out in the world. And then it seemed the recovered uncles would be jolly, and the ice cake loomed in the center of the table like a marble grave. Auntie Hannah laced her tea with rum because it was only rum. Bring out the tall tales now that we told by the fire of the gas light bubbled like a diamond. Ghosts wooed like owls in the long night when I dare not put over my coat. Animals lurked in the cubbyhole under the stairs with a glass window. And I remember that we went singing carols once when there wasn't the shaving of a moon to light the flying streets. At the end of a long road was a drive that led to a large house. And we stumbled up the darkness of the drive that night, each one of us afraid, each one holding a stone in his hand, in case, and all of us too brave to say a word. The wind through the trees made noises as of old and unpleasant and maybe web-footed men wheezing in caves. We reached the black bulk of the house. What shall we give them? Hark the herald? No, Jack said. Good King Wenceslas. I'll count 3. 1, 2, 3. And we began to sing, our voices high and seemingly distant in the snow-felted darkness round the house that was occupied by nobody we knew. We stood close together near the dark door. Good King Wenceslas last looked out on the Feast of Stephen. And then a small, dry voice, like the voice of someone who has not spoken for a long time, joined our singing.
A small, dry, eggshell voice from the other side of the door. A small, dry voice through the keyhole. And when we stopped running, we were outside our house. The front room was lovely. Balloons floated under the hot water bottle, gulping gas. Everything was good again and shone over the town. Perhaps it was a ghost, Jim said. Perhaps it was trolls, Dan said, who was always reading. Let's go in and see if there's any jelly left, Jack said. And we did that. Always on Christmas night, there was music. An uncle played the fiddle, a cousin sang Cherry Ripe, and another uncle sang Drake's Drum. It was very warm in the little house. Auntie Hannah, who had got onto the parsnip wine, sang a song about bleeding hearts and death, and then another in which she said her heart was like a bird's nest. And then everybody laughed again, and then I went to bed. Looking through my bedroom window, out into the moonlight and the unending smoke-colored snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on our hill, and hear the music rising from them up the long, steadily falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept.
Of the human mind?
I speak of things of knowledge that is beyond the human mind.
If it is beyond the human mind, how were you created? You are the human mind no more. So that is everything. Those animals of time, though they be evil, are creation.
Go away. Go away, Santa. You don't belong in my house. That's my tree right over there. And you can leave your presents out front. Go away. Go away, Santa. You don't belong in this house. Go away. Take your presents with you. They can be all front. The cookie is mine. The milk is mine. You can't kiss my mama. I don't care if you got a long bed or I'll bring you the fucking rabbit. Go away. Go away, Santa. Get the fuck out of my house. Go away, Santa. Leave the presents up front.
Thank you. could demand? Remember the old myth, brother? The forbidden fruit of madness?
Though we turn the earth into gold and cause the sun's rays to turn our engine, what you call thought is the projection of anti-humanity, the compassionless abstraction, the opposite, the mirror image of creation turned and distorted, given power by the forces of good. Though these forces breed hell itself.
Yaku, you working at Buck Pass now?
I told you. Thought. The creation of new energy. Yes, the creation of new energy.
Earth-treading stars that make dark heaven light. The title is taken from Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. And in Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare always contrasts darkness with light. You might think the whole play is about the darkness of the night in which Juliet and Romeo and Juliet make love, and also the light, this spirit and life after death and so on. Also, this poem is an attempt to answer a question. Why is the dark called dark, when really, during the dark, we can see the stars, which, when it's light, we can't see? Earth-treading stars that make dark heaven light. How can they call this dark, when stars that all day long the sun rules out show brilliant at the ends of space? Journeying down centennial rays, those antique worlds stand in Earth's air, the coruscating helmets of warriors born before the births of Greeks who chose their diamond names. All day the sun paints surfaces, commander of dial hands pursues the flying instants of last fashion. But when night comes and windows hew gold oblongs out of distances of solid sky, the park becomes the fulgurous center of the city, drawing from lonely streets the lonely under its boughs. There, in each other, beyond their coverings of clothes and names, they see flesh blaze, and then those pasts they were before they were themselves emerge, ape, lion, fox. Their mouths conjoined, they utter cries that once gibbered upside down through branches, before woods ever dreamed of huts. But two there are who look so deep into each other's night, they see yet further than their meeting bodies and earliest, most brilliant star, to where is nothing but a vow that is their truth. Those instruments of world-made flesh they bore to prove before all change their changeless word.
New beings!
What?
Brothers, I have created time. Now I will create a being in love with time. A being for whom time will be goodness and strength.
This is animal sense. This is magic against humanity, Yahoo!
What people do want? I will create.
visits from at some point. My alter ego separated from me. Openness. Instinct. Confidence. He has taken away. Only intelligence and creativity have remained to me. But I don't get anything out of that.
Oh, my God.
she leaves them. Amen. Does Pleno
I'm still
das trotz der in der Definition enthaltenen Einschränkungen tatsächlich alle kulturellen Artefakte, die eine erhebliche Auswirkung auf den Geschmack haben können, erfasst werden, so wäre noch nicht garantiert, dass Artefakte mit haptischen, im Grundsatz eher vernehmenden Auswirkungen erfasst werden, wenn sie im konkreten Einzelfall erheblich sein können.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.